And we now have with us Tim Schaefer, Assistant Director, Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy at Kansas State University. Busy guy. He's in the midst of traveling. I guess just got back from Ireland, heading to Birmingham, Alabama. Good grief.
Yeah, my wife and our now six-week-old child at home are lamenting my travel schedule, as she calls it. You know, it's a busy time for some of us who do this kind of community engagement work. In higher education, we have a lot of conferences they all seem to stack up against each other, which in one sense is really exciting. You get to be with people that you work with and you get to learn. And the trade-off is you're constantly heading over to, thankfully, there's an airport right across town, so I can scoot over there very quickly. But yeah, a lot of ins and outs in different places. But, you know, to the point of the previous guest you had on the first session today, the conversations globally about democracy, about the way that people are interacting, how we're kind of dealing with the push against institutions. You know, we just had the election in Germany yesterday and seeing Angela Merkel kind of retain her position. There's a lot of interesting things going on around the world, and so it's good to be able to talk with folks about it.
It is, and you know, as you were mentioning, you delve into deliberative democracy quite a bit, but there's a variety of democracies that we take it for granted. We have in our head exactly what a democracy is and should be.
Yeah.
But there are variations of that, and sometimes I think we lose sight of that.
There are, and democracy, as I often tell my students, because I teach about this, actually, every class I teach is in some way has democracy in the title or in the substance, is that it's this kind of unrealized ideal, and we put into practice these things that maybe help us strive towards it and help us figure it out. So we've done that for a really long time in this country. I mean, with all the kind of flux and anxiety and uncertainty that we've been experiencing in this country for in an intense way more recently, but for kind of a while with polarization and things of that sort, one of the responses that people who study this point to is like, we've got strong institutions. We have kind of a fail-safe in some ways. And that's, in one sense, that's reassuring. And there's always that element, too, that you're like, oh, I hope that's the case. Because we have seen, as your previous guest kind of pointed to, examples that you look at some nation state and you're like, yeah, they've got it. It's good. And then all of a sudden, it's not in the eyes of kind of these democratic practices. Are people, you know, free to move, to have economic opportunities, those types of things? Are there representatives representing them? Do they have kind of legitimacy in those ways? And so, yeah, there's a lot of there are a lot of manifestations of this. As I often point back to, one of the places we often look back is to Athens in Greece, kind of Athenian democracy, and they had a particular model, right? But it still excluded people, right? Certain people got to vote. It was not surprisingly, you know, white landowners, the men who had a certain degree of agency and others didn't. But they had this really fascinating kind of way that they did it. You know, they didn't have elected officials. They literally had the system where these little stones that you just kind of drew. And they had kind of black and white stones. And whoever drew the one that meant they were going to participate in kind of the forum that day, they were the ones who made the decision. So it was not, you know, you didn't elect your one guy every 4 years or 6 years or 2 years, but it was an everyday kind of routine. And you can see where we decided over time to change that model.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because, you know, with Venezuela, and I'm glad she reminded me of some of the history. I've had a peripheral idea what's going on there. But populism, I mean, populist thoughts can even be popular right here in our own country, I would think. I mean, nothing seems harmful about that, but then you get someone in there and things kind of change.
Yeah. I mean, and right now, I think, you know, the kind of moniker of populist denotes kind of a negative thing. But although we know in this country, historically, especially in this part of the world, kind of populist movements were really powerful and oftentimes very progressive, you know, kind of challenging kind of some of the norms that were going on at the time, particularly in the late 19th century into the early 20th century. And so it's important to remember some of those elements that the phrase kind of populist, the way that we understand it right now, has not always been that same.
Socialism. Now, that kind of, let's face it, one of the candidates in this last presidential election had tendencies that way.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, he identified
And that used to be a bad word in our country, but now not so much.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, he clearly identified himself, Bernie Sanders, as a democratic socialist. And people would, especially in other parts of the world, would critique that, saying, you're using a title that's maybe not quite exactly how they would identify it. But, you know, right, he did kind of push for and continues to, and he has for a long time advocated for positions that are more aligned with what we would identify kind of with socialist kind of dispositions and approaches, which is, you know, this is, I always teach this the first week or first couple weeks of classes, is that the tensions that we have, and we'll just talk about the U.S. for right now, but the tensions between what we talk about as kind of the individualistic and the kind of communitarian approaches to existing. So we're always wrestling with this sense of individual freedom and autonomy with also this sense of obligation and responsibility to other people. And we can think about that in various ways. The negative can often, and there was just a great piece in the New York Magazine by Andrew Sullivan talking about tribalism, this sense of, and this is one of the challenges I think we face right now, is that we've so identified with our tribe that it's really hard to see the views, the experiences, or to be sometimes sympathetic to those who are outside of that. And it's really challenging, especially in a democratic society that we have, the way that we have it constructed. I mean, this is why one of the big frustrations is, I mean, for example, you could look at our last election and say, well, it wasn't very democratic. In fact, the winner didn't really win the popular vote, right? Short about 3 million votes or a little bit more, 46%, right? That often doesn't get you the thing, but because we have this quirky system, the Electoral College. And so there are these things that all of our, you know, if we're thinking about countries or whatever the scale is, we have these kind of quirky dimensions of how we operate. And so just to be able to say, like, the United States is a democracy. Well, yes, but with nuances and the same ways that we would look at other places around the world. And then we have the ability to look at places like Venezuela, and then you start to see, like, oh, where have they, you know, where do they backslide, for example? Where have they had some of these institutions and they've changed the aspects? Like, they removed all their elected officials and they put in this citizens' assembly, which is basically a rubber stamp for the leadership. And so it's those kinds of things that become really concerning. But at the heart of it, you know, as I said, it's always this, at least for us in this country, it's the wrestling between these kind of tensions. The who am I? What do I have the freedom to do? How can I live? What job can I have? You know, all these kinds of things, and with also this sense of obligation. And we've seen it play out in positive ways with the environmental, with the hurricanes. You know, those often are those moments where we see people working across those lines. Nobody's, you know, taking their boat down the streets of Houston and saying, "Hey, who did you vote for last election?" Right? I mean, so, or they're throwing a bottle of water, or a case of water or food or whatever it might be, and not asking those questions. Those are those moments when we can rise above that. And there's a movement on the part of a lot of folks to try to elevate our politics, you know, to borrow that line back to Abraham Lincoln of, you know, how do we retrieve kind of our better angels? And we're challenged with that right now.
And, you know, interestingly, and we can get into all kinds of different areas, and I'm looking, though, at Germany. We kind of focused right here on mm-hmm. this country, and you mentioned they had an election, and, of course, I like the way Associated Press describes it this morning. They call it a complicated election result.
Yes.
conservative Chancellor Angela Merkel's junior partners in the outgoing government, or the center-left Social Democrats, mm-hmm. vowed to go into opposition after Sunday's election.
Yeah.
So it's a little rough over there now.
The numbers that I saw, I mean, so they have a parliamentary system. Again, you know, back to the variations of democracy, they operate. We have basically a two-party system and the winner-take-all kind of model. Whereas Germany and most other countries have this parliamentary system where their party got, I think, about 32.5%. That was what the early numbers were looking like. And they'll have to form a coalition government with some other parties. So they have to figure out, like, all right, who do we bring into our fold to help us do this? But, you know, the interesting thing is, I don't know what the numbers were this morning, but a new party, the Alternative for Germany, AFG, is a far right, you know, party. and they haven't that type of party hasn't been in the Bundestag, in their form of government, for 50 years, right? So we're hearkening back to some of the sentiments, some of the challenges that we wrestled with in the middle of the 20th century, i.e. World War II.
And people definitely are letting their voices be heard. Yeah. And the interesting thing is then the candidate who's elected will say, well, I was elected on this premise, and go ahead and act accordingly, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and so there's... As I was, I heard a little bit this morning, a commentator from Merkel's party saying, "You know, we're not gonna act like this new party is there, but we are gonna kind of try to understand why we had so many people move, because they're a center right party. Why we had so many people move to this kind of far right position, and trying to understand it. You know, there's a sentiment that's global right now. I mean, we experienced it kind of with the wave of elections last year." You know, it moderated a bit when France had their elections and Macron came in, and now we're seeing it with Merkel. I mean, the stability. I mean, that was part of what Merkel sold herself on. She's like, "I'm stable. Economics are in a good place. We're doing all right. There's a lot of flux around the world, but we're going to kind of stay the course." And that's, I think, why you saw her win her fourth chancellorship there.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. It's now 9:45, and Tim Schaefer with us today, Assistant Director, Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy at K-State, and 537-1350 if you'd like to join in on the discussion today.